would be remiss if I didn't make it very clear that Emily is the one who runs the data collection and collects all the school calendars from all our 26 schools and compares that to our staff that always seems to be one person short and makes sure that the 28 classes that we need at each of our 14 or our 12 intervention high schools are covered. So Emily is really the mover and the shaker in that regard. My presentation is on our provider intervention, is what we call it. And just to give you a little background on just LA and the schools and the community surrounding the schools. In Los Angeles County in 2005, about two-thirds of the chlamydia cases occurred among people younger than 24 years of age. And when we did our comparison to select our schools, we did look at the rates of teen births and chlamydia cases among 15 to 19-year-olds in the 12 high school attendance areas. And what we found is that in the 12 schools that we selected, the birth rate ranged from 43 to 95 per thousand. So our highest school had 95 births to 15 to 19-year-olds per thousand girls. The median was about 62.5, and that's compared to somewhere around a median of about 43 per thousand nationally at that time. The chlamydia rates ranged from 1,000 per 100,000 to over 4,000 per 100,000, and the median was about 1,600, and that compares to a median of about 1,400 nationally at that time. Our intervention is based on the guidelines for adolescent preventive services that were developed by the AMA, and these state that adolescents should be asked annually about their sexual behavior. Sexually active adolescents should be screened for STDs, and adolescents who screen positive should receive a diagnostic test, a treatment plan, and prevention counseling. And so the intervention goals for this level of intervention were to increase access to reproductive health care services for adolescents, including STD screening and treatment, and family planning services as well, because it's also a teen pregnancy prevention intervention study. And the targets of our intervention, as Kathleen mentioned, the targets are not the youth. The targets of this particular level of intervention were the healthcare providers in the community and the school-based clinics where the schools had them, and the school nurses were really the primary target of this intervention. We did identify local community-based healthcare providers, and what we wanted to do was to provide linkage between the school nurses and the healthcare providers, and support in the interaction between them. And we wanted to facilitate youth finding care on their own. Informative research, we met with the school nurses, we met with the district nursing supervisors and the director of school nursing, as well as the school nurses at our intervention high schools and middle schools. And they identified barriers to referring students for reproductive health care. One of their biggest issues was the problem of sending students off campus to receive reproductive health care in the case where there wasn't a school-based health clinic on campus. They talked about liability issues, and when we met with the district nurses and the supervisors and the director of nursing services, she made it very clear that there is no legal liability issue for sending kids off campus, even if it's in the middle of the day. That's consistent with LAUSD policy and education code. But the school nurses spoke more of a moral liability. They felt responsible if they sent a student off campus to seek care. They didn't know if the student would be able to find the place, you know, what if something happened to them. These are not the best neighborhoods in LA. To be sending a student off campus, walking by themselves to a clinic. And they also didn't know if the students were going to then find out about this policy and come to them and say, you know, they needed to get reproductive health care. They were afraid they were pregnant when actually they just wanted to ditch math class. And they also didn't know about the practices of the providers. They didn't know how well the providers offered teen-friendly services. Were their students going to be treated with care and compassion, or were they going to be treated rudely because they were young? They also didn't know if the services in the area were free or accessible for kids. And in our formative research in our youth surveys, not surprisingly, we found that most of the sexually active youth or sexually experienced youth had not been screened. Only 17% reported that they had ever been screened for STD. So what we did with this intervention, the main activity was creating a provider referral guide. And so we used the LA County Department of Public Health chlamydia reports to identify providers. And the way we did this was we had the zip code areas of the school attendance areas. And we overlaid that with DPH data on chlamydia among 15 to 19 year olds. And in doing that, we were able to identify providers that we were fairly comfortable because they were reporting cases of chlamydia. We knew that they were also screening 15 to 19 year olds. We then surveyed these providers. So we sent out a survey and we asked them about their adolescent-specific treatment. We asked them questions like, do you ask all adolescents about their sexual activity? And then do you screen all sexually active adolescents for chlamydia? And we asked a bunch of questions like that. We collected information on their services. We asked them about payment and the type of chlamydia test, because some of them didn't offer a urine sample test. They cultured. And so we figured the school nurses might want to know if they're sending a boy for a chlamydia test, where they can get a urine test, because a boy is going to be less comfortable with the culture. We also asked them about their family planning options. And once we had collected all the information and we felt we had a set of providers that provided adolescent appropriate services, we then physically visited every single one because we wanted to know what was going to happen when a 17-year-old walked through that door. And so we looked for the signage to see, was it a place that you could see easily from the street, or was it someplace that was in an office building? Or we found one clinic that actually the whole physical clinic was underneath a staircase. So if you looked at the building, it was in a strip mall, and if you looked at the strip mall, you couldn't see it. So we put notes like that in because we wanted to reduce every possible barrier for a kid that was going to get a service like that. And then we put the guides together. And as Kathleen showed you on the map, we have two clusters of intervention schools. So we came up with two sets of community providers. One set is in the San Fernando Valley, and one set is in South LA, and that's where our intervention schools are. We created a guide specific to each school and to each intervention school. So we have six intervention high schools. And then we listed the providers on their particular guide in order of proximity. So we listed the closest providers at the top, and we listed the ones that were farthest away. And I think the range was something like up to about 10 or 12 miles away. And we included providers who were close by and providers that were farther away on purpose, because the school nurses told us that a student might not want to go into a clinic, even if it's right in their neighborhood, because they don't want to run into their neighbor or their aunt sitting in the waiting room with them. So we did include the ones that were farther away. And this is what the guide looks like. It's 2 feet by 3 feet. It's laminated, and in the school nurses stick it up on the wall. We've seen it also outside school-based health centers. We've seen it in a health teacher's, in a room. So we've seen these in different areas. It's a big, unwieldy thing, and there has to be a lot of room on the wall to use this. But to blow up some of these headers and show you what's on here, we list the clinics and their contact information in the first column. And this includes their address, their appointment phone number, their cross street, and if they have it, a website. And in the blue column, we provide general information about the services. We gave the distance from the high school. We also asked about their appointments. Do they have after-school appointments, evening appointments, weekend appointments? And most of the clinics do have a variety of appointments. And then we gave the bus route from the school to the clinic. So we had to do this separately for each clinic, for each school, because we have the six different provider guides. In the yellow heading, we asked them about the gender of the patients seen, so we listed this for the nurses so that they don't send a male to a clinic that only sees the females. Some of the clinics only see the male partners of the females. And then we listed whether or not they had made any accommodations for the fact that some of their clients were going to be teens. And we find that actually most of these providers are pretty teen-friendly. They do have things like maybe a separate appointment line for teens, or a separate window, or just, you know, teen-appropriate materials in the clinics. The purple column lists the sexual health services that they provide. And so this is where we tell whether or not the client or the clinic provides a urine test for chlamydia. We also ask them about, you know, do they give out female condoms, hormonal contraception, and emergency contraception as needed or in advance. Some of the clinics actually do provide ECP in advance. And then for each clinic, we listed about the cost of the services. Every single one provides free services through Family Pact or Medi-Cal, but we didn't even want to put that as a note on there. We wanted to make sure that it was clear every single one has free services available for adolescents. And then in the additional information column, we put things like it's located in a high-rise building, excuse me, it's located on the second floor, excuse me, things like that. Okay, and then the student referral sheet, this is actually an 8.5 by 11 tear-off sheet. We didn't think the school nurses would like this because most of them are my age, and the print on this thing is minuscule. But, you know, for 17-year-olds, they can read these things. So this is it's basically a subset of the nurse guide, and it's a tear-off sheet. And it doesn't say reproductive health care on here on purpose, because kids take these things and stick them in their pockets, and then mom goes and does their laundry and pulls out this sheet. And if it says reproductive health care on it, then the kid's going to get some questions. So this is, it's listed as just as health care providers. It's a subset of the information that we felt was going to be important to the students. Some of the nurses actually prefer this guide. So some of the nurses do use this, we just provide it for you know, whichever one they want. Also, we put a comments column on this one because some of the school nurses said that they would like to know from the doctor whether or not, especially for a girl who might be seeking, for example, an abortion, they are going to have limitations on their activities when they come back. So they wanted a place for the physician to say to the school nurse, yes, there's a limitation on the student's activity. And then in the process of distributing the guide, we didn't just hand it out. We went in and we held an in-service for the school administrators. So we included in these meetings, most importantly, the school nurse. We also included usually our school contact, who was an assistant principal at the school, typically. And then we tried to include counselors, anybody who might be making referrals, but also we included the attendance people, because we're talking about referring students off campus during school hours, and so we needed the attendance people to be in there in the meeting with the school nurse, with the assistant principal, so it wasn't us coming in from the outside and saying, oh yeah, you have to let them go. It was also the assistant principal saying, yes, this is the school policy. We talked about the district policy on confidential medical services, which goes along the same lines as the California Department of Education code, and it states that that school personnel may release a student during school hours to seek confidential and sensitive services. It also says that parents may not be notified. And the attendance people had to hear this, because the attendance, they have a very sophisticated system in the school district where if a student does not show up for a class, they get a phone call that goes home to their parents. So they needed to be able to work this out within the school. We didn't necessarily tell them how to do it. We just raised the issues, and they discussed it in this format and dealt with it as they saw fit. So we discussed all these barriers. We discussed the nurses' concerns, and we tried to also share a little bit, tidbits that we got from other nurses. So if we went into one school and they said, well, I always give them the referral at the end of the day and tell them to go in on their way into school to the clinic and then report back to me. So if a nurse, you know, expressed concern about sending a student off campus one day, we would tell them, well, this is what we've heard from another nurse, this is what another nurse does, and this is what we've heard from, you know, the director of student nursing. So we tried to share things like that. Given that this is our third year of intervention, we know that things change at clinics, and we've had clinics that no longer are accepting new adolescent patients, so that clinic is now off the guide. We've also had clinics that learned about the guide, called us up and said, how do we get on this guide? So then we had to go through our whole process of surveying them and everything, and so we update the guide yearly because things change. And then we also do a process review. So we go back to the school nurses and we ask them, how is it going? You know, are you hearing back from the students? Have they had bad experiences at any of these clinics? Are there clinics you like to work with, clinics you don't like to work with, things like that. So we're constantly in contact with the school nurses to make sure that things are going okay. And so obviously our intervention effect, our research question is, does the use of the guide increase the percent of adolescents who receive reproductive health care services? And the measure that we use to test this is in the high school youth survey, because we don't ask the middle school students about the reproductive health care. And the receipt of reproductive health care question is based on the past year, and we ask them, did you see a doctor or nurse in the past year for birth control? Or did you see a doctor or nurse in the past year for an STD test or treatment? We also have individual questions on whether or not they were ever tested for STD and whether or not they were ever tested for HIV. Our analyses are chi-square analyses. Again, these are preliminary findings. We looked at the outcomes by data collection wave, and we performed these tests within conditions. So we looked at this in our intervention school participants and our control school participants. Again, the analyses are restricted to high school students, and we only looked at the sexually experienced kids, which still ends up being an awful lot of kids because we have a really big sample size. So what we found was that the receipt of reproductive health care did increase significantly across waves for intervention participants. It's a small increase. We started at wave one with 23% saying they ever received reproductive health care. By wave three, we've got 27% saying they've received reproductive health care. And this was a stronger effect in the males. So it was a little less than 12% among males at wave one, and this was up to 16% at wave three. With females in the intervention schools, we found a marginally significant increase in receiving reproductive health care across waves. It goes from 33.5% to almost 40%. And we did find that receipt of reproductive health care was not significantly different by wave. Among control participants, it tended to hover around 23-24% who said they had ever received reproductive health care. I did say control participants, right? Or did I say, okay. Just checking. Okay, and this is the graphic representation of that across all the sexually active students, males and females, and you can see the increasing trend in the intervention schools and the more static trend in the control schools. And this is for males. We see the sexually active males in our control schools have a non-significant increasing trend in receiving reproductive health care, but the trend in the intervention schools is significant among males. And this is what it looks like among females. And I made these scales on these three slides identical, so you can see that the females overall do receive reproductive health care more frequently or report more reproductive health care in the past year. And this mirrors the overall trend. So the control schools, the females were more static. They didn't report an increase in receiving reproductive health care, but in the intervention schools they did. And then when we looked at STD testing, we found that the percent ever STD tested did increase significantly across wave for both intervention and control participants. So kids in both our intervention schools and our control schools did report increases in ever being tested for STD. But when we looked at this by gender, what we found was that there was a significant increase among girls in our intervention schools, but not among girls in the control schools. So in intervention schools, at our baseline wave one measurement, 29% said they had ever been tested for STD. But by wave three, that was up to 42% of our sexually active females. We saw a non-significant increasing trend in the control schools as well, but it was a much smaller difference, and it was non-significant. And so this is the graphic representation of the difference in females sexually active, and it's a nice strong effect. And then when we looked at HIV testing, we found that the percent HIV tested ever increased significantly across waves in our intervention participants, and so the kids in our intervention schools, and this went from 20% to about 24%. It's not a huge increase, but it was significant. And it held for both genders. So we found that about 16% of boys in our at wave one reported that they had ever been tested for HIV, and this increased to 22% by wave three. With females, we had about 25% at wave one who said they'd ever been tested for HIV, and this increased to about 34% at wave three. In contrast, in our control schools, the participants in our control schools, did not report an increase, a significant increase. It was a non-significant trend, and it's a very small difference from wave one to wave three. And this is, again, the difference in the increase, and you can see that the numbers do diverge by wave three. So to summarize, our intervention was associated with an increase in the receipt of reproductive health care in the past year, especially for boys. We also found that our sexually active girls in our intervention schools were more likely to report that they had ever been tested for STD. And we found overall, in both genders in our intervention schools, there was a significant increase in HIV testing. So what this means to us is that our intervention does appear to facilitate sexually active adolescents' ability to go out and get reproductive health care, including STD and HIV testing. Anecdotally as well, we find that the intervention assists the school nurses and others in the schools in making referrals for students who need reproductive health care. And the school district really likes this intervention. The schools like it. The director of the medical director at LAUSD really likes this. The school-based health centers like it, and they really would love to see this program expand. And we believe that if they also believe, but we believe that if we did expand this effort, it would have an impact on teen pregnancy and STD rates. And there are quite a few advantages to using this approach. The actual assembly of the guide and the printing of the guide is really very, very low cost. With a small number of staff, it's sustainable. The biggest staff outlay is in actually updating the guide and continuing to collect the information year after year. But the guide empowers school nurses to do something that they're facing on a daily basis. They have kids come in, and the kids come in presenting with a problem, and the school nurses need to know how to deal with this problem. And this provides them a tool that they have learned how to use, but also that they feel comfortable in using, and that they're developing some interaction with the providers on this guide and getting to know them. And it empowers them to be able to provide a solution to a kid who's coming in with a problem. It provides a nice mechanism for collaboration between the health department, the schools, the school district, and the community providers. We've also conducted meetings now we pulled all these people together into a room so that the school nurses could actually talk to the providers, and we had Dr. Kern, who's director of the STD program, also in the meetings and talking about the different barriers and the different concerns and how we can collaborate more to make sure kids are receiving the reproductive health care that they need. In addition, the kids are now able to learn how to go out and get this care on their own. And the really nice thing about that is that the nurse is then in a position where she's teaching kids how to go out and seek health care. And then the kid actually goes out and does it and goes to the clinic, goes to get the care, and comes back to the nurse and talks about the experience. So it's really educating them in being consumers of health care. And we're hoping that this is going to translate into long-term health benefits for these young people. Excuse me, that's all I have for you today. Thanks very much.